Welcome to another edition of Gateway to Baseball Heaven. I'm your host, Daniel Shoptoff from C70 at the Bat and at C70 on Twitter. With me, as always, is Tara Wellman from Bird Seeds, Bird Tales. Find her at Tara Wellman on Twitter. Tara, as we were talking before we got the show started, this idea of winning just one in a series is really not working out for me. And it feels like that's something that needs to turn around fairly quickly.
Yeah, I can't say I'm a big fan of it myself. It's not really the trend I would like to see continue, although when you can lose two of three and still gain a little bit of ground on the Cubs, it's not the worst way to go about ending the week.
I guess we'll
Thanks,
look for,
Dodgers.
Yeah, we'll look for silver linings where we can, and it does make you wonder. I mean, you do look at that. I mean, we looked at the fact that the Giants came into town and we thought, oh, they were doing so poorly. The Cardinals should do better against them. Well, they went 1-3. But then they went to Chicago, and I think they went 1-2 out of 3 against the Cubs. Mm-hmm. Cardinals, you know, played the Dodgers, win 1 out of 3, and then the Dodgers go in and sweep the Cubs. You know, it as bad as the Cardinals can act right now, and I mean right now as we record this, they're a game and a half behind Milwaukee, but they're tied with the Cubs. You know, maybe it's just that this division is that weak, and even if we're going to get beat up on by other teams, at least it's not people inside our division.
Yeah, I think what it does is make very evident that the division is still very much in play, despite how poorly the Cardinals have played at this point, which could come up and be pretty significant as we kind of go into the month of June and see what happens there, because John Mozeliak has some options as far as what he wants to do with this season and what that means or how that compares to what he wants to do with the next couple of years. You know, if for some reason they didn't really expect to be within a game or two after the 3-9 start, you know, they still have every chance to make some noise in the division. So I think it makes things a little bit more interesting going into the middle part of the season and up to the trade deadline, because whereas if they were, you know, 5, 6, 7 games out, which still isn't absolutely insane at this point of the year, but playing as poorly as they have, being 7 or 8 games out, you're not necessarily thinking about making a big move at the trade deadline. If you're a game and a half out, and tied with the Cubs and you're trying to chase down the Brewers, who don't seem to have maybe the staying power. Again, they're playing in a division with a Cubs and a Cardinals team that are not really living up to expectations at this point. So, you know, everything's still in play right now. So you got to kind of, I would imagine, from the general manager's office, it's a little bit of a different balance at this point than it would be if they'd not turned it around after the first 2 weeks of the season.
Yeah, I mean, you look at this division, and it's from top to bottom, it's a 4-game spread, whereas there's a lot of divisions in baseball that there's bigger than 4 games between first and second. So, yeah, it's all clumped together. Now, the flip side of that is, and it's something that may become more in play as the season goes on, that safety net of winning the wild card is a lot harder. I mean, mm-hmm. Right now the Cardinals are 4.5 games out of the wild card already. And if they continue to sputter, it's going to be, you have to win the division to get into the postseason, which is not the way that we thought this season was going to go. Now, again, long way to go, and you really don't want to talk about playoff possibilities yet, but it is something that Mozeliak would have to keep in mind. And maybe he kept that in mind a little bit this week as we saw a little bit of roster shakeup. You know, we saw today, obviously, that the move today was injury related, with Colton Wong going on the DL and Paul DeJong coming up and hitting his first major league home run and maybe providing a spark, we will see. But before that, the Cardinals designated for assignment Miguel Solokovich and brought up John Barea, from a guy that I will admit was not on my roster or my radar, is not a guy I had heard much of, but, you know, Mo does what Mo does.
Yeah, you know, it's a very classic Mo move to some degree, because, you know, he's maybe not bringing up one of the big name prospects in a way that will, you know, we've seen him do this a number of times. He wants to leave the guys who are maybe the superstar prospect, I don't know, superstar, but the star pupils of the Cardinals organization. He kind of wants to leave them alone and let them continue to develop at the pace that they've determined is necessary. So he'll sometimes be very hesitant to bring those guys up, and not to do it in a situation where it looks like it's just going to be a short-term thing. I think it's the same reason that we saw Sierra come up when he did. It wasn't, he was never intended to stay on this roster. So the fact that he played really well, gave him an overall, promotion to Springfield from Palm Beach, but that was why he was there, because he wasn't a guy that they were going to need to try to find a room for on the major league roster. This is a little bit different in that, yeah, he wasn't really on the radar. Brebbia wasn't really on the radar, but he is the bullpen needs something, and you know, they got to start moving some pieces around, and if they have the guys at the Memphis level that can do the job, then that's great. But if they don't, then they need to know that. So this is a guy that's been around the game a while and has an interesting story as far as being one of those guys that never really thinks he's going to make it because of the way that their career has panned out. And then all of a sudden he gets a shot. So it's a great story, if nothing else. And hopefully it will be the shot in the arm that the bullpen needs, or at least the first step.
Yeah, and it feels like this bullpen needs more than just a first step, although what those steps are is a little bit of up for grabs. But we saw that, you know, twice this series in Colorado, and obviously we have seen it more out throughout the year, because over the last couple of weeks, the starting pitching for the most part has been excellent, and yet they still can't win because the offense doesn't support them and the bullpen blows up. So, I don't know what the next moves are for the bullpen. It's still, I know a lot of people are still surprised that Jonathan Broxton is hanging around. And I think there's some weight to that. But now we've seen Matt Bowman kind of hit a rough patch after being so dominant to start the season and really a lot of last year. He's been weak over the last probably 2 weeks or so. Is this the league finally catching up with him, or is this just something that he'll make an adjustment and be able to be more effective?
You know, I don't really think we've seen him have to make an adjustment like this up until now. So it's really hard to say. I mean, it could be just guys figuring out or getting enough of a book on who Matt Bowman really is at this point that they know what to expect. But this is the next challenge for him in this stage of his career. You know, when you come up as an unknown, you're an unknown to the entire league, not just to the fan base that maybe didn't quite have you on their radar. So he's been able to fly a little bit under the radar thus far, and now everybody knows that he's the guy that's going to come into the big spot. So this is a big part of him cementing himself in that bullpen, because there are a lot of guys who can be good for a couple of months, but there are not a lot of relievers who are good year in and year out. That's why there's so much turnover in major league bullpens. So he needs to make the adjustment, and I think we're going to get our first look at whether or not he can. It may not be fair to ask him to make that adjustment in Colorado. So, you know, get him back home this week for a couple of games and then out on the road again to other places that aren't at altitude like that, and see if he can't make some of those adjustments.
Yeah, I mean, just looking, since his scoreless inning streak stopped, and this does not include today's game, which was not good, he's got an ERA that's just a hair under 7. Still striking out about a batter an inning, but also walking about 1 every 2 innings. It feels like, yeah, it could be some bad luck, but it is something that he's going to have to adjust and see if he can. And, you know, as much as you hate to say it, there was a reason. He probably was a reason he was a Rule 5 guy. And so it may be a one-trick pony, and you get what you know, to get anything out of him is great. But, you know, hopefully he can make those adjustments because, you know, there's only so much random selection, I guess, that you can make out of this bullpen. I mean, he does have options. You could send him down and try somebody else for a while. and use that Memphis shuttle a little bit. But that is seems to be a problem. The Cardinals don't have a lot of those guys that they can go up and down with. They're kind of locked into either using them or cutting them.
Yeah, that is the, you know, we've seen them go back and forth a lot with some of these guys. Even Segrist did that. Tyler Lyons has been back and forth. Sokolovich and Tuivailala and all these guys that have made an appearance in the Cardinals bullpen in the last couple of years, you're not going to be able to play that game with all of those guys forever. So you got to figure out who's worth holding on to and who you can maybe do without or who you can replace with someone from the AAA level. You know, they held on to Soko for a long time, and I don't know that I was ever really sold on him having a particularly high ceiling. He was just kind of a guy that could fill some gaps, but there, I don't know. You, like I said, you either have to figure out that you have pieces at Memphis that can play at the major league level, or find out that you don't, and then figure out how to move on from there and try to bring guys in from outside the organization. Otherwise, you know, why do you have those guys there? So it's going to make the roster a little bit in flux until they sort some of it out, but you know, there are some guys that just aren't getting outs, and you can't hold a spot for those guys on a roster and expect everything to just work out around them. So I think at some point Mo's going to have to make more than just this one move.
Yeah. Now, I guess if you want to look at the silver lining of this, is that the bullpen hasn't been blowing leads. you know, you haven't been frustrated at the fact that they've given up a game. And that's mainly because the offense hasn't given the starting pitchers any runs to work with. That the bullpen has just allowed games to get out of hand versus, you know, actually losing them. The top of this lineup is just amazingly bad right now, it feels like, for the names that are up there. You know, I know Dexter Fowler continued to probably work on that shoulder injury, and I think there could be some argument about whether he should have gone on the DL at some point in time in this. And Matt Carpenter, you know, Matt Carpenter has one tool, basically, as we've proven last week, that he cannot do base running. I think we have proven that defense is not his calling card. He has to hit, and Carpenter's not hitting, at least not the way that he is used to. And I don't really remember him slumping like this. I mean, he's either hit for average or hit for power or sometimes both, but now he's not really doing much of either.
Yeah, the only time that I remember it being quite as bad is when he was dealing with that kind of mystery fatigue issue a couple of years back and just went into a tailspin. Of course, that correlated with moving him out of the leadoff spot, so everyone blamed the position in the lineup and not the fact that he hadn't slept in a week and a half or whatever the problem was. But, you know, that's fine. No, Matt Carpenter doesn't look like the Matt Carpenter that we saw starting in 2011 when he got some occasional playing time and then worked his way into an everyday job and got to the point where he was consistent enough of a hitter that they felt okay with letting some of those other middle-of-the-order bats walk because they felt like Carpenter could be that guy. Right now, he's not that guy. And I'm sure that some of the body language and some of the frustration that we're seeing is a response to him not hitting well. But, you know, that sort of creates a vicious cycle that makes it even more obvious when you're struggling. He's arguing almost every ball and strike call. He looks frustrated every time he doesn't hit a double in the gap, and then when he does, he tries to turn it into a triple and ends up frustrated anyway. So I don't quite know what's going on with Matt Carpenter. I feel like there's more to it than just he's in a slump, because that happens to guys. I don't know if there's still I was talking to somebody about this the other day. I don't know if the oblique injury from last year caused a little bit of this, and we saw them be really careful with him in spring training so as to not re-aggravate something there. I don't know if that's still a factor, if that's still in play for him right now, but if it is, similar to what you said about Dexter Fowler, I can applaud a guy playing through injury, but if you're a shell of yourself while doing it, it's not really helping anyone. So I don't know, but it's frustrating to watch. It's hard to watch because he's not the Matt Carpenter that we've come to believe in and be confident in over the last couple of years.
Yeah, his on-base percentage is right about what it normally is. He's at 376, yep. Where he's usually about 380. So, you know, it's his eyes fine, I guess, is what you want to look at. But, yeah, I mean, and even home run power is, I mean, just looking at his numbers, he's got 9, which would put him on a probably a career-high pace. But he only has 5 doubles to go along with that, and that's Matt Carpenter's game, is to hit the doubles in the gap, like you said. And, you know, if he puts one over the wall, that's great. But, you know, he should be hitting, you know, this is a guy that hit 55 doubles in 2013. I mean, he's probably on a pace right now to hit about, you know, 20, maybe. That seems wrong. And so I don't know. No, it's not great.
Out of your 3-hole hitter. Just not great.
Not great. No. And that's kind of the catch-22, though. There's not anybody better to put in these positions. I mean, I know that the Cardinals this week talked about moving Dexter Fowler out of the lineup leadoff spot, but that seems kind of silly. I mean, to some degree, I don't know that Dexter Fowler helps you anywhere else, and I don't know that anybody else could take over that leadoff spot well. I mean, what happens if Matt Carpenter takes over that leadoff spot and starts hitting? I mean, you know, are you going to tell me you're going to move him out of that position? No. Then what do you do with Dexter Fowler? I mean, I guess you could make the argument for a Carpenter-Fowler 1-2 punch. We talked about the other way around. But it still feels like that the Cardinals are kind of locked into some of these things, and they don't have a lot of options. They've just got to hope the bottom of their lineup can make up for the slump of the top.
Yeah, you know, it's almost like they've swung the pendulum to the opposite extreme this year from last year, where it felt like there was so much flexibility that there was no consistency. This year, it feels like there's pretty much one way this lineup works, and at least as far as the top 3 or 4 go, and even that 4 spot is a little bit mysterious some days. But those top 3 are pretty locked in, and if they're not playing like they ought to be playing, then the rest of the offense doesn't ever get going. You know, it's almost like their offense stalls before the game even starts because the first inning is over before everybody can get comfortable on the bench. And those three guys, whether it's Fowler, Diaz, Carpenter, or Fowler, Piscotty, Carpenter, those are three guys that should be able to drive the engine of this offense, and not one of them is doing it right now. I don't think, I agree with you. I don't think that moving Dex out of the leadoff spot really helps anything at this point. One, because he's probably still dealing with a sore shoulder, which doesn't help his case any. Two, because Dex has been a solid leadoff hitter over the course of his career. There's no reason to think that he's just not ever going to hit. And three, because there's not really a better way to situate him in this lineup. So the core issue is that these guys just have to start hitting, and I don't know how you fix that, but they need to figure it out quickly.
Yeah, and I don't, you know, we talk about, a lot of people talk about Magnerio Sierra being that spark that this team needs, that the team was winning when he was here. They've started losing since he went down, which, I mean, if you want to be literal, yes.
They're not wrong.
No, I mean, that is true.
By them, I mean, I'm not wrong.
But it is, again, hard to assume that a guy that got, what, 25, 30 plate appearances is the savior of this team. It's a lot to put on the shoulders of a guy that had a good run and may have been able to continue that run in the major leagues. But again, as we've seen with Matt Bowman, sometimes it takes the league a little time to adjust, and you've got to readjust. You know, they've got Tommy Pham still there, which I think that idea was Pham and Sierra together were this, you know, dynamic speed demon 1982 right. Red and Redbirds team all of a sudden. And, you know, Pham has still been, well, his normal self, where his as we said before the show, he hits 180 one week and 640 the next.
All evens out, right?
Yeah, it evens out, and it's better than most of these people are doing, so I'm not complaining about it. It's just a difficult thing to deal with. But it is hard to see why, again, Sierra would give this team maybe a lift. I can't say that Sierra is going to solve all these problems. It's a lot to ask for a guy that's usually hitting 7th or 8th in this team. Now, you know, if Fowler goes on the DL, do you bring up Sierra and make him the leadoff guy? Well, that's an interesting discussion to have for a while, but I don't think we're going to have that. You know, speaking of guys that are struggling, Randall Grichuk looked about as bad as a guy could look this weekend. And while he's a streaky guy as well, his slump is really extended out period of time. Being that he's the guy so far that the club has not financially committed to, because they've signed Piscotty, they've signed Fowler, obviously, does that make his position a little bit more tenuous? That maybe, I'm not sure if he still has an option here to go back to Memphis, or he's more likely to be shipped out just because the Cardinals may need to do something.
I think the fact that the Cardinals were willing to play Matt Adams in left field over Grichuk tells you everything you need to know. No, I think that Randall Grichuk has an enormous upside, but he's also one of the most frustratingly inconsistent players that the Cardinals have on this team. He has all of the capability of being a great hitter for this team, but he's so streaky that it's hard to buy into that as a real fixture in the middle of the lineup. You know, it's interesting. There was an article that came out this week talking about some of the changes that Grichuk is trying to make to his swing, and you know, trying to drive the ball more, not get under it so much. He tends to hit the ball a mile high, but to the warning track quite often. So there were some comments from Grichuk about how they're trying to change his swing, get on top of the balls a little bit more, which is all good and well. But it's almost like whatever they're trying to do has him caught in between at this point. He looks like he's completely guessing at pitches most of the time right now. So I don't know if that's just the way Grichuk is going to be over the course of his career, or if he's got so much going on in his head right now with the adjustments they're trying to make to his swing that it's affecting the way that he takes pitches at the plate. That all may be a completely unrelated excuse, but I'm at this point looking for any sort of reasoning for how terrible he's looked over the last week. So I'll pretend that that's part of it, even if it's not. But it does make you wonder if the Cardinals can't get something going. He seems to be the guy that doesn't have any of the assurances that the other outfielders do at this point. So it just makes him getting it going even more significant and even more important.
Absolutely. And especially this week, as Stephen Piscotty has been out on a personal matter. Again, the club hasn't said anything about it, and there's no reason to necessarily say anything about it, but you do wonder how long he's going to be gone, because if it's going to extend out too long, and this team is, granted, this team just seems to enjoy playing with a short bench, being that they've had 13 pitchers for who knows how long. But then when
too
you,
long. That's
wait,
long.
Yes,
too long.
Yeah, too long. A day is too long usually, but anyway. But then you take out another, you know, significant bat out of the lineup. Even if Scotty is struggling, it's still something. You know, I think they said with, you know, on Saturday, which is the game that they won, with Long hurt and Scotty gone, I think the bench was Fryer and
Garcia.
Yeah, maybe if something. I mean, two guys. That was basically it. One of which is your backup catcher that you're probably not going to use. So hopefully he's back by tomorrow's game. If not, I would think the club would have to make some sort of roster move. And, you know, who knows? Maybe that's Sierra for a day or two. I don't know. And then they'll win for two or three days, and everybody will lose their mind again. So, as we said earlier, the starting pitching has been significantly the highlight of this team, obvious highlight for the most part. a little bit of a glitch maybe from Lance Lynn today, a little bit from Michael Walker last time out, but for the most part, they've been putting up a lot of zeros. And a guy that's been doing a lot of that is Adam Wainwright. And I know that about 3 or 4 weeks ago, some of us, and I will say that was probably me, were about ready to figure he was shifting into this late inning, you know, five inning pitcher type of, you know, just trying to get by veteran leadership role. And to Adam Wainwright's credit, and I think it should be well noted, I mean, he has made whatever adjustments he needs to make and has looked pretty strong against some strong competition over the last three starts. I think he's given up about one run over that time. Gone at least into the sixth in all of those games, and definitely looks more like the Wainwright we're used to than the Wainwright we were seeing earlier this year and most of last year.
Yeah, I mean, he does look a lot more like the Wainwright we're used to in the fact that he's been able to work out of trouble, he's putting up zeros, he's going deeper into games. But I don't think that he looks like the Wainwright we're used to as far as how he's pitching. He has made some changes. He's not necessarily relying on some of those tricks of the trade that worked for him 2, 3, 4 years ago. He's having to find different ways to get outs, but he's doing it in a way that's really interesting to watch. The way that he's mixing in pitches, the way that he's changing up speeds, the way that he's that he and Yachty together are maybe throwing pitches in counts where you wouldn't expect to see that pitch repeated or to go back to something or whatever the case may be. So they're doing it in a really fascinating way to watch. And I think that's what we were waiting to see from Wainwright. We heard him almost all of last year after every start basically say, this time I really figured it out. No, for real this time. I found what needed to change and I got it this time. So I think we were maybe a little tired of hearing that from him, but to his credit, he seems to have figured something out, and whether that was just a mentality shift as far as how he had to attack batters. I heard him talking a little bit about his start this weekend, and he was saying that, you know, he can't really hold anything back. He can't really save anything for later as far as velocity or effort. And that may be why we don't see him with a complete game shutout this season, because he's having to attack every pitch with a little bit more concentration, a little bit more effort than maybe he has in the past. But that's working, so he seems to be in more of a groove every time out. You know, two starts is a nice trend. Three starts is a bit of a streak, so we can maybe buy into it a little bit more at this point, and hopefully that same streak continues.
Yeah, I mean, again, we noted this a couple weeks ago. He did have some stretches last year of 2, 3, maybe 4 good starts and then have it blow up on him. So, you know, you feel good. You don't feel 100% confident. Then you're a little bit more likely to feel like he's going to have a good game next time out, but you still knock on wood a little bit. He should face the Dodgers and Bush in that series this time around. So, you know, hopefully that's another good outing and we'll see how it goes. Cardinals play the Dodgers for 4. Then they go to, you know, come home for 4 games, turn around and go up to Wrigley Field for 3. And given the way both teams are playing, that series in Wrigley could be not a huge series. I mean, you're talking beginning of June, but still a series that the Cardinals could really be nice to win that one. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, it still feels like the Cubs are the measuring stick for the NL Central. So at this point, even a game and a half behind the Brewers, there's no real reason to think that that's not the case. Both of the series between the two this year so far at Busch have been pretty fascinating to watch, pretty entertaining baseball. And, you know, you add the Wrigley element and the fact that I think Dexter Fowler will be getting his World Series ring into the mix, and there's going to be all sorts of hype around that. I already have friends who are texting me about that coming up in this series. So it adds a little bit of a spark to a rivalry that doesn't need a whole lot more than it already is. But as far as the Cardinals are concerned, any time that they can take games away from the Cubs head-to-head, those things are going to come back to either haunt them or to be sort of, I don't know, that turning point is the right word, but real significant moments over the course of this season, taking games away from the team that might keep you out of the postseason when you have the opportunity to do so yourself is a pretty big deal, whether it happens in May or in July or in September.
Yeah, and like I say, if you can get, you know, I continue to feel like the Cubs are that team, you know, when you see it in basketball, you see the underdog that gets up by 15, and if they can just hold on, but as soon as that favored team comes back and ties it up, you know, usually they go away and, you know, start to pull away, and the underdog falls off. The longer you could keep the Cubs down, the better. The more likely you have to winning this division is my feeling. And so if you can win two out of three there, I mean, that's just three more games that the Cubs don't have on the schedule, and you've pushed them down a little bit farther. So hopefully we'll see that, but you got to get through the Dodgers first. I believe Kershaw went today, so we won't see him in that series. That's a good thing. Usually, I know Cardinal fans like to point out the postseason, but he does pretty well against the Cardinals in the regular season.
He does pretty well against everybody, let's be honest.
Yeah.
He had a couple of bad innings against the Cardinals, but that does not define his career against St. Louis.
No, and, you know, if it wasn't for that wild pitch in Tuesday's game, he would have gotten a win against them. So, should be an interesting series. And then again this weekend. 2 weeks from today, we will probably not be doing a show. I will be in St. Louis for the Blogger Weekend. Unfortunately, Tara will not. She will be going a different direction. And so we'll probably not have a show that week. But we will be back next week. We'll talk about the Cubs series, which apparently is going to be a Sunday night baseball game again, because why not? Yes, it's the Cubs. I think the Cubs are on every week, aren't they?
This week it was the Mets and the Pirates.
That's an interesting combination.
You know,
but I'm guessing that's just because David Ross had to, you know, rest up from his Dancing with the Stars, and ESPN had to do something different.
Sure.
You know, because you know, I'd hate for the Cubs to have any less time in the spotlight.
Right.
So until next week, for Tara, I'm Daniel. Good night.
Hey Cardinals fans, thanks for listening to this week's show. If you liked what you heard, you can find us on iTunes. Just search Gateway to Baseball Heaven under podcasts and click subscribe. While you're there, feel free to give us 5 of those little gold stars or even a quick review. And tune in next time as we break down another week in baseball heaven.